From Erie to Phillipsburg, Pittston to Whitehall, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, government subsidies to large companies put small businesses at a competitive disadvantage. Robert Engel from the Free and Fair Market Initiative is here to discuss. They feed the hungry and clothe those in need in Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and across the country. Joe Geiger of the First Nonprofit Foundation has Paul Findlay of Focus North America in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And a consensus is growing across ideological lines to give those who have broken the law a second chance. Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania explains on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Robert Engel in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The latest in a long parade of Pennsylvania elected officials to be headed to jail is former state treasurer Rob McCord. McCord this past week was sentenced to 2.5 years in prison, resulting from a 2015 guilty plea for extorting campaign contributions from state vendors. He attempted to force or forced those with contracts to provide services to the state to make contributions to his failed 2014 campaign for governor. He lost that contest to now Governor Tom Wolf. McCord apparently cooperated with the investigation. It resulted in a more lenient sentence. Another former state treasurer, Barbara Hafer, got no jail time after she pled guilty to using her position to gain consulting contracts after she left office. Speaking of Tom Wolf, he's now running for re-election and coming under heavy criticism this week from his Republican opponent, former state senator Scott Wagner. Wolf has refused all but one debate invitation, that a traditional appearance by gubernatorial candidates at the annual dinner sponsored by the State Chamber of Business and Industry. Aside from that, Wolf is refusing to debate Wagner, who claims the governor is attempting to, quote, run out the clock without telling Pennsylvanians what he would do should he win a second term. Wolf currently leads Wagner in most polls. The city of Pittsburgh, which recently was named the second most livable city in the country, got another distinction this week, this one a bit less desirable. Pittsburgh will become the largest U.S. city without a daily print newspaper after the Post-Gazette announced it was cutting publication to just 5 days per week. The Pittsburgh Tribune-Review already has discontinued its print editions, opting to publish a daily electronic product. The newspaper industry has been hard hit by competition from electronic news sources. Many papers have scaled back or eliminated their print edition. In the state capital, Harrisburg has had a print newspaper only 3 days per week for the past few years. Read about all things Pennsylvania on the all-new patownhall.com. State and local governments roll out the red carpet, offering tax incentives and subsidies to large companies like Amazon, which is considering two Pennsylvania cities as the possible site of its second national headquarters. But those taxpayer-funded goodies come at the expense of small businesses and taxpayers. Robert Engel is the retired CEO of CoBank and is chief spokesman for the Free and Fair Markets Initiative. He is here to talk about government picking winners and losers. Bob, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Bob, when we talk about giant corporations, and Amazon is just one of many, why is it that state governments, county governments, municipal governments feel the need to offer these giant corporations that are highly profitable tax breaks in order to get them to locate within their boundaries?
Well, Loman, it's a great question, and it's a question I've been asking myself for decades now. I actually grew up not far from Pennsylvania in Western New York, and I watched a lot of this corporate welfare go on, and time after time, the promised benefits and the promised uplift never seem to materialize, yet the practice seems to continue. And I think it's fair to say that when you think about local communities, history will show us that that the best way to grow commerce, to grow jobs in those communities is is when you invest in startup ecosystems, when you deepen industry specializations. There's a lot of ways to go about it other than writing checks to organizations, particularly large organizations, that clearly have the wherewithal to make these investments themselves.
Let's talk specifically for a few minutes about Amazon and the national sweepstakes that's underway relative to them locating their second national headquarters, or HQ2, as it has been dubbed. Tell us a bit about that competition. How extreme have states gone in falling all over each other to try and get this headquarters?
Well, I would tell you, Loman, certainly from my perspective, and I think anyone who follows the news, this is absolutely the epitome of a race that people believe to the top that is probably a race to the bottom. Look, certainly Amazon is a well-respected organization in many ways and has a right to be well-respected in many ways. But sometimes when you take a look at these organizations, I think you have to ask a couple questions. First, how have they grown or achieved success? What is the business model they employed? And then, what have they done with that success? You know, who has benefited from that success and who has paid the price? And I would tell you, Amazon is clearly in a class of its own as it relates to how it has built this business model. They have swallowed up over $1.5 billion in taxpayer subsidies since 2000. And again, that's in spite of the fact that they're raking in record revenues. They are by far and away the largest lobbying organization that exists of the large organizations. They spent over $16 million on lobbying and campaign charges at the state and city level, and they've done that quite frankly to try to put themselves in that position where people believe that by attracting Amazon, going to be a panacea for certain issues you're trying to address. When organizations from out of state are attracted, they really don't create many of the jobs or create much of the benefit that we see. And in this HQ2, if you take a look around and hear the numbers, Loman, think about the numbers they're talking about. Pennsylvania won't even release the numbers. They won't even provide the transparency that I believe every taxpayer is entitled to in terms of spending their funds. Maryland is talking in the neighborhood of $7 billion. New Jersey talking $7 billion. And if you think about organizations that are looking for that type of handout in this type of environment, it's really hard to get your head around. And as I said, this really has become the epitome of a contest. And it's a contest that I'm not sure the winner isn't going to be the loser. So look, from my perspective, when you had a state like Pennsylvania that has already paid some $23 million to Amazon to locate facilities there, when you have a Pennsylvania State Commission that's trying to figure out how to cut costs and to deal with some real problems in the two large indebted pension funds in the state, and you have a commission of lawmakers that say, look, our big issue here is we really haven't been transparent. We had a bunch of investment managers that didn't do a very good job and weren't transparent about it. So that's coming out of one side of the mouth. And out of the other side of the mouth is, well, hey, look, we're not going to tell anyone what we're going to give Amazon. And I don't know who the beneficiary is going to be, but they're certainly not going to be the broad beneficiaries that they're held out to be.
We are talking with Robert Engel, who is the chief spokesperson for Free and Fair Markets Initiative. We are talking about specifically Amazon, but basically any company, especially large ones that get tax breaks and government subsidies in order to locate their facilities in a state or a locale. And Bob, let's also talk for a minute about the impact of this on other businesses. I know our local mall has a giant vacant storefront where a big name chain went out of business. There are malls all across Pennsylvania, all across the country that we are seeing empty storefronts. A lot of the anchor stores are closing. How fair is it to those brick and mortar stores that are struggling already to compete with Amazon? How fair is it that Amazon also then gets tax subsidies on top of it, which, by the way, those businesses are helping to pay for?
It's pretty obvious that it's not fair. We've seen time and time. I spent the last 17 years of my career going across this country in all 50 states with co-banks, and I've seen local communities and small businesses that have been decimated as a result of Amazon's ruthless tactics. And isn't just about getting the consumer a good price. They claim that, hey, look, this is really a boon to small businesses. But the fact is that Amazon's aggressive business tactics have directly resulted in the loss of 85,000 small retail businesses in the U.S. It's also, I think, well documented that small businesses that sell products on Amazon.com complained for a long time that the tech giant uses that data about sales trends to manipulate and drive down prices, so putting further pressure on margins while hiking the fees.
Another area where Amazon competes with other businesses, Bob, would be specifically in government for bid contracts. And the fact that you have taxpayers underwriting some of the operations of a company like Amazon or any company, I mean, we don't want to just pick on one company here. Does that also not then give them an unfair competitive advantage when it comes to bidding on government contracts or private sector contracts against companies that aren't receiving those tax breaks?
Well, look, of course it does. And look, well-run organizations, you know, try to use all the intelligence, all the data they can in order to put themselves in better position to compete and to be successful. And it's one thing to do it that way. But when you have an organization like Amazon, okay, that really has built itself off a system of corporate welfare, let the taxpayer put the dollars up, let the taxpayer take the risk, and then once that happens, then we'll be the beneficiaries.
Again, we have been talking with Robert Engel, who is chief spokesperson for an organization called Free and Fair Markets Initiative. Bob, tell us a bit about your organization.
The Free and Fair Markets Initiative is, our vision is quite a simple one. It's this modern, fair marketplace that serves the best interests of individual Americans and the nation as a whole. It's this whole idea of not having this unlevel playing field, Lohman, that you referred to. And what we're committed to is really scrutinizing and highlighting these emerging market trends that really are stifling competition, they're stifling innovation, they're clearly influencing federal and local government spending, and also putting consumers' data in harm's way and limiting consumer choice. And so what we're hoping to do is to educate people, to activate them, and then to advocate for policies that really would level the playing field and preserve free and fair market competition.
And if we have listeners who would like to learn more about your organization, where can they go on the web to get that information, Bob?
They can go to Free and Fair Markets Initiative. I know it's a lot of letters, but it's pretty simple, freeandfairmarketsinitiative.org.
Robert Engel, chief spokesperson for the Free and Fair Markets Initiatives. Bob, thank you for being here.
Lohman, delightful to be with you. Thanks for having me.
They provide food for the hungry, clothes to those in need, shelter, and job training. St. Herman's Focus is part of Focus North America and is based in Cleveland, Ohio. To learn more about their services, Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation talks with Executive Director Paul Findlay. Joe?
Thank you, Lohman, and thank you, Paul, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio Program.
It's good to be with you today.
Paul, tell the listeners a little bit about your organization, St. Herman's Focus Cleveland.
St. Herman's Focus Cleveland is an outreach center in Cleveland, Ohio. We're based in the inner city. If anybody's familiar with Cleveland, you may know where Ohio City is on the west side of the Cuyahoga River. And we are a subsidiary. We're wholly owned and operated by Focus North America. And Focus North America is based in Pittsburgh, and also there's a very active outreach center in Pittsburgh as well called Focus Pittsburgh.
What was the inspiration for getting this organization started? I know it goes way back. Share a little bit about that with us.
Well, if we're talking about Focus North America specifically, it's a ministry of the Orthodox Church, which in many respects is Eastern European in its origins, newer in terms of its immigration to this country. But the church has grown substantially in America, and whereas I think for many years it had a bit of a ethnocentric mentality, most people know of our churches, you're either Greek or you're Russian or you're Romanian or Serbian, the church has matured, and in that respect, it wants to reach out. It wants to be part of the community. It wants to help people in need, which is not only a commission of our faith-based belief, but also just something that we really believe is important to be a part of the neighborhood, a part of the city, a part of the state. So I think it just reached a point there about 8 years ago where people came together from all those different varieties of the Orthodox Christian Church and formed this ministry, Focus North America, in order to have that impact. In terms of St. Herman's in Cleveland, it actually was a monastery of the Orthodox Church, started in 1977, and when it had to disband as a monastery in 2011, not only did the churches that were supporting it come together, but the whole community, a local city councilman, a pastor in the Lutheran Church, all kind of rallied around the work that had been done here for homeless people and helped it to survive a transition that ultimately landed it as a part of Focus North America.
How do you reach out in the community, and or how do people who need the services find you?
Well, when you've been doing something for 40 years, the word is out. And we really don't have to advertise. I try to network with a lot of other agencies, so they're always aware of what's going on. But we serve 3 hot meals a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. We served over 82,000 meals last year. And when we're in an area in Cleveland where there is a lot of human services, and almost every one of them knows what we do. If a person shows up at the Westside Catholic Center at 4 o'clock and says he's hungry, they're going to say, go over to St. Herman's. They'll be serving dinner at 5:30. They all know our schedule. They all know what we do in terms of food, clothing, and shelter. So, you know, we're an agency member of the food bank. We're on United Way's 211 list, which people call that number to find out where they can get help. But most of it, honestly, is just reputation and having been here so long and people know the routine.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. And my guest today is Paul Finley, the director of St. Herman's Focus in Cleveland, Ohio. One of the interesting programs that you do internally is an apiary where you have beehives. And you use that project to teach them job skills and create a resume and that kind of thing. Talk a little bit about your apiary program.
And that's a program we're very excited about because it falls under the larger umbrella of a farm just outside of Cleveland that we're developing into a recovery ranch. And the first little agricultural endeavor we did last year, we had a pilot program with 4 beehives. We got the beehives donated, and, you know, we didn't have a lot of expense in it. I had a volunteer that helped train 3 of my men to be beekeepers, and myself being the 4th man. And we actually sold all that honey at a fundraiser from those 4 hives and netted about $2,000. And based on that, some of our supporters helped me put together enough to buy 20 more hives. Are actually 17, so now we have 21. We have 1 on our property in town, an urban beehive. We have 20 on the farm property, and we're getting ready to bottle our spring harvest, which was substantially more than what we got last year out of the 4, and we'll get a lot more in the fall. But it's a work endeavor. It's a social enterprise. It raises money for St. Herman's, but it provides a stipend program for the men that work it, and we actually received a very gracious grant through First Nonprofit to add 40 more hives. So next year will be a full-on, probably one of the larger apiaries in Northeast Ohio with 61 hives, and we're going to train 8 men as beekeepers to maintain those hives and have a much stronger stipend program so that it has an employment element for the men, but also raises money for the work that we're doing generally.
Paul, the kind of work that you do, It's not like when you go wash your car and then in 20 minutes you have a clean car. It takes a long time to see the outcome of your efforts. At the end of the day, how do you and your staff know that you're making a difference?
When you sort of live in the midst of it, as I do, knowing I made a difference is a very tangible thing. When I see a young mother with three kids in tow be able to sit down and eat a meal, and then one of those little children thanks me, I know I made a difference at the end of the day. When I see a man come in for a change of clothing after 2 weeks of rainy, cold weather, and he hadn't had any clean clothes to put on, and he walks out with a smile on his face and a clean set of clothing, I know I've made a difference. When I see a man sit in my office, and this is a true story, all these are true, but I had a 50-year-old man, we just got him into housing, he just got his keys, he came, sat in my office, and he held up his keys, and he said, I got my keys. And I said, well, congratulations, you've worked real hard, worked with your case manager, done everything you needed to do. And then he started weeping, and I said, what, are you all right? He said, you don't understand, I'm 50 years old, I've never had a set of keys. I've lived with my mother in jail, in prison, on friends' couch. I've never had my place and my keys. So those are the things that make you know at the end of the day everything you're doing is worth it. You have to help a lot of people to see a big difference in a few, but that big difference is, it just keeps you going from moment to moment.
It's a terrific outcome that nonprofits all over this country do every day that I think many people just don't have a full appreciation for. That's part of what makes our country great, the work of volunteers and nonprofit organizations. This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Paul Finley, the director of St. Herman's Focus Cleveland. Paul, if somebody wants more information about your organization, how can they find you?
Well, a couple of ways. You can go to focusnorthamerica.org, our website. You can also go to our website, which is St. Herman's, spelled out, S-A-I-N-T, Hermans.com. We're on Facebook, and we would love to hear from anybody that wants to know more about Focus North America. We have a lot of work going on in Pennsylvania, Ohio, actually a lot in the Midwest, and we have relationships with many churches throughout the country. We have national programs, a variety of things, but the website would get you to phone numbers and contact information most readily.
Paul, thank you for being a guest today. You have a terrific story, and I'm glad that we were able to share it with people across Pennsylvania.
Thank you, Joe. It was a privilege. I really appreciate it.
Back to you, Loman.
Do you believe in second chances? More and more Americans do, and the effort to rehabilitate rather than incarcerate is growing and spreading across ideological lines. Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
There's a growing movement of Americans from across the ideological spectrum who are beginning to realize that our current approach to criminal justice isn't working and want to do something to fix it. The Keystone State should be a place where folks who have earned second chances get them. Deserving inmates should have a fair chance to rebuild their lives, reunite with their families, and re-enter their communities after paying their debt to society. Fortunately, there's a bill before the U.S. Senate that can do just that. The First Step Act, which was passed overwhelmingly by the U.S. House of Representatives, would create access to second chances for individuals transitioning to life after prison and reduce the number of incarcerated Americans. It's a bill Americans for Prosperity supports. Helping inmates transition to life after prison would lower recidivism, save taxpayer money, prepare folks to tackle future challenges, and lead to safer and stronger Pennsylvania communities. We agree that America needs to combat recidivism and keep violent, dangerous criminals off our streets. But high incarceration rates don't necessarily lead to safer streets. In fact, it often has the opposite effect. because it's built on a common misconception that harsher sentencing and mandatory minimums deter people from committing crimes. A comprehensive review of studies by the National Research Council found the deterrent effect of lengthy sentences was, quote, modest at best, unquote. Tough on crime posturing isn't just an ineffective approach to criminal justice and a huge waste of taxpayer dollars, it's also an enormous waste of human potential. Pennsylvanians who, with the right opportunities, could become contributing members of their communities are instead trapped behind bars. We can look to state reforms that are already paying off across the country to see how effective a smart on crime, soft on taxpayer approach can be. Georgia has implemented a series of evidence-based reforms that shift the focus from incarceration to rehabilitation. They divert first-time offenders from prison, change sentencing guidelines, and created programs that help the formerly incarcerated successfully reenter society. From 2008 to 2016, Georgia's imprisonment rate dropped 24%, while the index crime rate dropped 6%, proving that criminal justice reform and safer communities can go hand in hand. Due to reforms Texas began implementing in 2007, the Lone Star State has been able to close 8 prisons and reduce crime rates to some of the lowest levels since the 1960s, all while saving taxpayers over $3 billion. If we want to get serious about creating safer communities and cutting crime, it's time to focus on hard data and success stories from the states. Senators Toomey and Casey have an incredible chance to help by supporting the First Step Act when it gets to the Senate. The bill would create evidence-based risk and needs assessment tools that would be used to prepare incarcerated individuals to successfully reenter their communities as law-abiding individuals. The First Step Act would also ban the shackling of pregnant inmates, allow individuals to earn good time credits, allow outside programs into federal prisons to enhance rehabilitation and reentry, and require prisoners based on their level of risk to be placed in facilities within 500 driving miles of their primary residences. President Trump has indicated support for the First Step Act and is hopeful to see the bill considered by the Senate this fall. Working to reduce crime and break down barriers to opportunity for folks who deserve second chances is something citizens from both parties can agree on. I'm Beth Ann Mumford, State Director of Americans for Prosperity. Find us on the internet at www.afppennsylvania.com.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WMBS AM and FM in Uniontown, WRNN FM, and WKNB FM in Warren, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.